Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, time for our Friday gathering and going over the stories of the week. And this week, I'm joined by Fianna Fáil TD from Meath the East and Minister of State for European Affairs, Trade and Defence, Thomas Byrne, Social Democrats TD for Dublin Rathdown and spokesperson on enterprise, tourism, media, communications, culture, sport and defence, Sinead Gibney, political editor with the Irish Independent, Mary Regan, and political editor with the Irish Examiner, Elaine Loughlin. Now, at the top of the show, we heard from immigration lawyer Cathal Malone, telling us that bar a frantic 11th hour effort by concerned citizens and a High Court judge, the Trump administration is pretty much at liberty to illegally deport whoever it wants via Irish airspace at Shannon Airport. But Thomas Byrne, the stories that are circulating at the moment that people were transported against their will and in breach of a court order through Shannon Airport and elsewhere, is that a cause of concern?
Well, it is a cause of concern. Again, we only read the newspaper article, I don't know, was it Wednesday night or Thursday morning? We read that the flight was on Wednesday. So this has obviously caused concern in government, and we're trying to find out exactly what was happening. It's a civil aircraft. It doesn't actually require permission to land, the same as civil aircraft from Ireland to other countries, or indeed our own deportation flights, which are conducted legally by the Department of Justice under Jim McCallan, are permitted to land at for refueling stops under international conventions. That's just a fact. It's not a diplomatic or military plane. It doesn't need permission from the Department of Foreign Affairs to stop. That again is just a fact of life that we're dealing with. We don't have full clarity on what happened, and we are trying to find out what happened.
Okay. Is it a good argument for spot checks, though, because it's not military and because it's not diplomatic and because it's civilian? Presumably it would be easier to do a spot inspection on this type of flight.
I don't know if spot checks are allowed. I actually just don't know. Are they allowed under the Chicago Convention, under the Air Traffic Convention? I don't know. They may not be allowed. But I think that's a legal question that will have to be answered, whether you can do that in the first place or not.
I think, Mary, there's a report sought by Eamon Ryan when he was minister from the Department of Transport. We haven't seen it yet. I think it's been in the bowels or in gestation for about 9 months on the issue of spot checks. This might be a timely time for publication.
Yeah, and I think what we're hearing from the government is that this is a cause of concern, but that no law was broken here. So this was a civilian aircraft that travelled through. And I think the charge that they is coming from the opposition and that could be put to the government is sort of a lack of curiosity, maybe turning a blind eye to the flights that are going through Shannon at the very least. And, you know, this has been an issue for years, but the Taoiseach acknowledged in the Dáil yesterday that this is now a real matter of public concern. And is it going to be politically sellable anymore to sort of just say, well, they're passing through, everything is okay as far as we know, no laws are being broken, and, you know, take the US word for what's passing through Shannon Airport?
Well, handily enough, we don't have to second guess what a member of the opposition might say. We have one here, right here in studio, Sinead Gibney. The men who are currently in Djibouti coming through Shannon Airport, do you think more could or should have been done about this?
I really do. And I mean, I accept, obviously, that the minister has set out some of the facts. This is, you know, legal under the Chicago Convention. There was no obligation for the DFA to check them. However, the other facts in this matter are that these were men from Vietnam, Cuba, Myanmar, Laos. They are now in Djibouti, a country where many of them are not from, in violation of a court order in the US. So it doesn't break Irish law. It breaks US law. Now, I appreciate that we do not have a say in that, but we do have a moral say in it. And I guess the point is, speaking to Mary's reflections there, there's no surprise that this went through Shannon, because this has long been known that there will be a level of turning a blind eye and you know, a lackadaisical approach in terms of monitoring. So I just don't think there's any surprise, and I think there has to be. This is obviously an issue that has been a civil rights and a human rights issue for Ireland for many, many years, and I think the government has to step up and actually figure out how they're going to get a better handle on it.
Right. Would you imagine that when we were talking to Cathal Malone earlier, he said it is open, if this were to happen again, the aircraft spotter that knew this was landing in Shannon could have had the option to get somebody in Ireland to lodge a habeas corpus writ. Do you think that'll be tested?
I expect it could well be. I heard that US journalist, self-proclaimed aviation geek, earlier explaining exactly the phone call she had with the Irish Gardaí in Shannon and how she approached that issue. So I think, I mean, this isn't going to go away, you know, and I think we also have to see it in the context of what's happening in the US. I mean, deportation is a policy of the Trump administration. It's happening in many different ways. We've seen, you know, people caught up in error who are still in jails in South America. We're seeing students who have attended protests be deported. Like, this is a policy move from the Trump government that is not going to stop. So I think we have to get our house in order. And okay. We're going to deal with it.
Elaine Loughlin, this, you know, there are still answers on this. Simon Harris, the Taoiseach, to say he's looking into it. And as I said, this report from the Department of Transport, we're still awaiting that to see what kind of an inspection regime could be carried out for any future such flights.
Mm-hmm. And I think the response of Simon Harris in the Dáil yesterday, and indeed Minister Thomas Byrne here beside me, is beyond disappointing at this stage. We've had calls for tighter regulations to look into flights, but whether it's sending arms to Israel or now we see the deportation, which is subject to a court order in the US, happening and going ahead and coming through not only Irish airspace but stopping off on Irish ground. And we hear that it's all within the law, we have to assume that everything is okay. And even in the Dáil yesterday, Taoiseach Simon Harris said, we have to take them at their word when they say that everything is legal. We have to assume it, just like another country would assume if we are sending a deportation flight to another country through their airspace, that we would be within the law. And I think Colin Malone, you had him on earlier on, he basically said that the government is operating a trust but don't verify policy. And that's exactly what's happening here. And we, as all media, I think, sought clarification after that happened from both the Department of Transport and the Department of Foreign Affairs last night. And they basically said in a joint statement that there is nothing stopping the US from sending another flight and stopping off here today, tomorrow and the next week. And we know that the US is ramping up these type of flights. And we also know that long before this week, the US had sent another flight, albeit to South America, which was also subject to a court order. So the US has form here and is going to continue.
We don't know yet if there has been any sort of diplomatic discussions between the Irish side and the US side where the Irish government could convey at least that they should have been informed of this flight landing at the very least, or saying, you know, we would like to be informed if this is happening. Those conversations don't appear to have been happening at the very least.
Sorry, just to be clear, there's no obligation on anyone to inform us about this flight. The same as if one of our deportation flights, which are carried out lawfully in accordance with Irish and international law, if they stopped to refuel in Italy on the way to Georgia or wherever they're going, they've no obligation. There's no right of the Italians to look at those planes either. This is international law.
Let me ask.
It's very easy to come in. But sorry,
let me ask, we don't know the full legal process
in the US, and we can't be expected to know that at, you know, 8 hours' notice when the media, when in fairness, an issue is raised and people ring the Gardaí. That's fair enough, and it's raised with the department, and we're looking into it. But the idea that we've all the answers on this immediately, where we're absolutely complying with our obligations and our responsibilities under international law, and we've nothing to do with this. A civil aircraft can land once it contacts air traffic control and does it properly and safely in accordance with those rules. They don't have to ask us. Now, to be clear, military and government planes do have to talk to the Department of Foreign Affairs, and that there is a difference. But this was not a military or a government plane, and the same applies to flights that we're sending out as well.
Can I ask,
and we're not sending them in the same manner, to be clear. But
do you think the inspection regime is adequate for civilian aircraft in Shannon Airport, when you have this story today? You have reports on the Ditch website where a plane leaving Israel and going in the direction of America was carrying aircraft engine parts in 2023, and other planes have traversed through Irish airspace and Shannon Airport, which have in the past been used for the transport of armaments. Is the inspection regime adequate and robust enough for Ireland to assure itself?
Sorry, just to be clear, I can't inspect the plane that's flying over the country.
No, I didn't say overflights. I said Shannon Airport.
No, you also said overflights.
No, the flight I specifically referenced, one going from Israel to the United States, is one that stopped in Shannon Airport. So what I'm asking you is the inspection regime for civil aircraft adequate in Shannon?
I think our civil regime, for we're very dependent on air traffic ourselves, and our regime has to be in compliance with international law and the international treaties that we're part of, and following all the rules in there and all our responsibilities as well. And I'm confident that we are doing that job.
Right, Sinead Gibney.
Well, just to say, I think, I mean, the Minister just raised at the very outset the question of whether or not spot checks are permitted under this. I think it looks like in the regulations from 2007, which basically brought that into law, spot checks are, I mean, rampant, you know, and that's, I mean, the government has a choice in how it implements policy in this area and law in this area. And as I said, it's not surprising because we know that this has been an issue for many, many years. I mean, we had rendition many years ago. We've had protesters dealing this. We have been crying out in the opposition for clarity as to whether or not there are transport of munitions, both over our airspace and in terms of airplanes that land on the ground. And there is a choice to not inspect. It is a policy choice.
I mean, inspections in the airspace are obviously challenging. So are you talking about prosecution after the fact where that's found to be the case? Or are you looking at some form of a regime that would, you know, escort people out of Irish airspace? In the absence of jets, we just don't have them.
We do have ways. There are documentation that's around every single flight that can be inspected. There are other ways of looking into that. But my point being that there is not a proactive interest in this. I mean, apparently when Shane Ross was Minister for Transport, he never once permitted any of those requests for munition transport through Irish airspace. I am struggling to get figures on what the government current government's position has been on that and whether or not, because up to the dates that we were able to get figures, not one had been refused.
Okay. Elaine, Sinead's party has been calling for a referendum on the triple lock, but from the evidence to date, that doesn't look like it's on the cards.
It doesn't, but the government does seem adamant that the triple lock will be changed, that legislation will be pushed through to change how our peacekeepers essentially get approval to go out to various peacekeeping zones. And I understand as well that actually Taoiseach Simon Harris has written to the Justice Committee asking that they prioritise the legislation around changing that triple lock so that may expedite it. And it does seem like something that this government do want to press ahead with. Now, the triple lock, once you even raise it in Ireland, it's contentious, and I know people have very strong views on it. And it is all obviously in some way linked to our view of neutrality and how we really do hold neutrality dear in this country. But I think possibly, and Thomas is going out to Europe on a regular basis, he may be able to speak to this, but I think it is important to note that when especially government leaders go out and are talking to their counterparts, they're hearing a very different story now in Europe to what we are, the conversations we are having here. And they're hearing about this real palpable threat on the borders of Europe, a threat of war. They're hearing about massive increases in spending on defence. You know, we're about 0.2% of GDP currently. Some countries are up, I think, at 4 or 5% and are actually taking money out of the social protection budget to put into defence and security. So I think we're at a very different level and are having a very different conversation here. The discussions at that Justice Committee around the triple lock, I think, may move again how we're speaking about defence on, but it certainly won't be an easy ride, I think, for the government.
All right. On the specific issue of the referendum, Thomas Byrne, once upon a time, your party in opposition, your foreign affairs spokesperson was then Ray Burke, wanted a referendum on entering even Partnership for Peace. And far more recently, as recently, I think, as the last couple of years, Micheál Martin was calling the triple lock a core part of Ireland's neutrality.
Well, first of all, we've been in Partnership for Peace for over 20 years, and I don't think it's impacted in any way.
I know, seeing as you mention it, Fianna Fáil were in power when the country entered Partnership for Peace without a referendum, which you'd called for in opposition.
I can't account for what was said in the 1990s, but I do know what's happened since, which has been
fine.
Your current
party leader said the triple lock was core to Irish neutrality. Let's address that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first of all, the triple lock means that if you want to send Irish troops abroad, essentially for peacekeeping purposes, you need to have government approval, Dáil approval and United Nations approval. Now, the difficulty with the third part of that lock, the difficulty that has arisen, is the changing global politics. So I went to the United Nations in October, November 22 to see the renewal and to work on the renewal of the mandate for Operation Althea, which is Bosnia-Herzegovina and Irish troops are there. We have to get a UN Security Council mandate. I did not know until the last possible moment whether Russia would veto that or not. We have a number of renewals coming up this year for a number of well-known operations that we're involved in abroad in terms of peacekeeping. We don't know whether the Security Council will support that. Security Council is the only organisation which can actually mandate what we can do, mandate rules that need to be followed internationally under international law. And it is simply not working because of the Russian and Chinese veto. We were subject to one of our top priorities during our Security Council membership was to bring the issue of climate to the Security Council and have that discussed as a security issue. Russia blocked it and stopped it. And they are, it is certainly the case that they may well block the renewal of some mandates for peacekeeping missions that we're currently on. Okay. It is also the case that they haven't brought any forward. And what Sinead and her party want to do is say, let's go to the General Assembly instead. And what that means is you have to canvass every single country in the General Assembly to see whether Irish troops can go on peacekeeping missions abroad. And that includes countries like South Sudan, like Djibouti, and these other countries that are the subject of the discussions today. I don't think that's acceptable. I think our government and our Dáil, with full scrutiny, can make these decisions without impinging on our sovereignty and without impinging in any way on our neutrality, but to allow our troops to operate in the way that they've always operated abroad, which is to bring peace to countries and maintain peace and to bring honour and good reputation to this country as well.
All right. Do you want to respond to that, Sinead?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's, and Thomas has explained this feeling he had in you know, that he was living under the threat, essentially, on Project or Mission Anthea. I mean, but Russia didn't veto that. And I mean, saying that Russia might veto it and you don't know whether or not that's going to happen is simply stating what the UN Security Council is. That is what we asked for. We asked for multilateralism, and the multilateralism system involves a veto from the Security Council. Now, we fully acknowledge that there are difficulties in the chilling effect and the fact that there have been blockages at the UN Security Council, but it is completely conflated by this government. And we are not saying that instead of that, we go to the UNGA, the General Assembly. What we're saying is that if it fails because of a deadlock, and of course it is hard because diplomacy is hard, but if it fails there is a fallback on the General Assembly under the United Nations Peace
Resolution. What do you say to people who might point out that Ireland operated peacekeeping abroad from Lebanon to Congo to all over the world without a triple lock?
Never without a UN mandate, though. And the triple lock was brought in on the Nice and Lisbon treaties because of the fear of exactly what this government is trying to do, pull us towards EU militarisation.
The question I'm asking is that, you know, even at the point before Ireland went into the European Union, Sean Lamass was openly contemplating going into NATO maybe as part of that. And yet, despite those instincts, Irish troops were not committed on any other duty that was non-UN duty. So, and they didn't need the triple lock to prevent them from doing that.
But those safeguards are in place and they are vital, absolutely vital for both this government, but for any future government as well, because that's what this is aiming to do, is to dismantle all of those safeguards. I mean, we'll be looking through the legislation in detail, but there are so many parts of it that are really
important point, because Sinead talks about if the Security Council veto something, and this won't be a new mandate because they don't do them anyway, so there's no new peacekeeping mandates in many years. But if they veto
the last one was 2014, but if they veto a renewal,
we haven't really thought through the practical consequence of that. Well, that would mean immediately the Irish troops would have to leave and come home. In many cases, the peacekeeping missions would continue because some of them are under NATO, for example, in Kosovo. They'd continue without the UN mandate. Now, they would be restricted because the Security Council can give particular powers under international law. But in the meantime, Sinead is saying, instead of going to the Dáil, we would then go around countries like South Sudan, Djibouti and the whole of the world and ask them, can you put a resolution?
Except it won't always come back to the Dáil, because once it's voted on under your new system, once it's voted on once in the Dáil, there's no return for renewal in the Dáil once the mandate has been given.
Well, I mean, the Dáil mandate is really, really important, and the mandate will set out what the troops can do, what the scope of the mission is, and there'll be a scope of mission established anyway. So that will tell us exactly what's going to happen, and all these issues can be dealt through. My main concern is that the Dáil has oversight of this, and the government has oversight of this, and every TD in Dáil Éireann makes these decisions, and not countries like Russia, South Sudan, or Djibouti, and that's the reality of what's been proposed.
I do want to move on to something else, because the hip surgery audit is due for publication today, or it's out today. Thomas Byrne, when can we expect to see the full text of this on publication, so it can be scrutinised?
This is happening on a fast-moving basis, but what I understand is that this will be published at 1 o'clock at lunchtime today. It was received by the minister yesterday, so it may well be published while we're on the air. I'm not 100% sure. The immediate priority, obviously, is to follow up to ensure that there's clinical care of patients. And there will be, I think, a hotline. I won't call it out. I think I'll leave you to call it the hotline number. numbers, but there'll be a hotline there for people to get information. And I think that's the first priority today, is that people who may be affected by this, that they get the information that they need and the care that they may require.
All right, Mary, this is likely, for very understandable reasons, to be a massive issue of public concern and also political debate.
Yeah, and it's, you know, another sort of example of, you know, children being potentially failed in this country. We know from a draft of that report of 561 hip surgeries on children, found that 79% of operations at Capa Hospital and 60 at Temple Street did not meet the threshold for needing surgery. Now, that is a very high level, you would have to say, of something so... you know, something like surgery for a child, you know, when it's not clinically needed, that is, you know, something of a scandal. And it'll be interesting to see how the government responds to this today and, you know, what the opposition has to say. And it was also emerged yesterday as well that the surgeon who implanted three of the children with experimental spinal devices is also linked to this investigation of unnecessary right. hip operations. So this is emerging as a big issue.
I think even the term spinal devices, I mean, they were unapproved non-surgical springs. So that this is obviously, as you say, going to be a matter of concern. Crumlin Hospital, Elaine, said there was no issue identified there. But again, this is going to, I would imagine, dominate political debate for the next few days. And there'll be obviously great efforts to reassure parents who will be understandably disturbed by this.
Yeah, and I think if you're a parent of a child who had surgery in Capa or Temple Street, you would be very worried, because as Mary outlined there seems to be a big difference in operations that met the criteria that were carried out in Crumlin. I think it was about 98%, but just 21% met the criteria in Capa. And I think we're still waiting on that report, but it's expected that the likes of the concerns that would be raised in that report was that there was often no history of treatment ahead of those surgeries being carried out. You know, the likes of the splints or braces that are sometimes put in shortly after birth, and no evidence that there was a dislocation ahead of surgery in some of these cases. So, as I said, if you're a parent today who probably made that really tough decision anyway to put your young child through surgery, you're waiting for a letter probably to come out now to clarify. I know parents have been already notified, but we do expect about just under 500 recalls and possibly a few that are very urgent as a result of this review.
Yeah, just recapping on what we know so far, and it's been mentioned there, there was a lower threshold used in 80% of spine or hip cases in Capa Temple Street. That was 60% of cases. There was 147 cases reviewed across three hospitals, Crumlin included, along with Capa and Temple Street, and it involved 14 surgeons for the procedure known as pelvic osteotomy. And there's going to be an international panel of experts set up, and parents who wish to have their child's case reviewed will be offered an opportunity to have it reviewed. Sinead Gibney, with what's emerging so far, what's your reaction to it?
Well, I think that last point is really important, that those reviews have to be independent. And, you know, again, just really thinking of all those families today who are very concerned about the what's coming out in this report. But if patients are called, we understand patients are going to be called to reviews. So if that is the case, we need a timeline and we need to make sure that they are independently done. Padraig Rice, my colleague, who is chair of the Health Committee and who was the first to raise this issue in the Dáil, he is calling for the minister, will be calling for the minister to take take questions in the Dáil this week. And he's going to write to CHI to come before the committee, because there are questions around governance there. There's absolutely no question about that.
Okay. And no doubt more on this throughout the day and indeed in the coming days as well. Mary, the Occupied Territories Bill, where is that at the moment?
Well, so the Occupied Territories Bill is at the moment, the Simon Harris, the Tonnage, that he was meeting Francis Black yesterday to present a timeline to enact the government's version. That's just a timeline, though, for now. So I think we're expecting it to go to Cabinet first and then to the Foreign Affairs Committee, and then it will bring its journey through both houses of the Oireachtas. So at that stage, you know, we only have, I think, less than 8 weeks to go until the summer recess. So it's unlikely that we'll get this before the summer, as has been expected and hoped for by Senator Black.
Okay, what's going to the Oireachtas Committee, Thomas Byrne? Do you know, is it heads of a bill or a broad outline of the notion of an occupied territories bill?
Look, I mean, I think we'll see that in due course. I mean, the government commitment is clear. We will enact the Occupied Territories Bill. There's work to be done, and that will involve, obviously, the government, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, but also, of course, the Oireachtas Committee, and that'll be all done in public, very, very importantly. I think it's one part of the work that we are doing, and we're leading internationally. It has to be said, and our colleagues in Palestine recognise this, we're leading internationally as a very strong moral voice on the whole outrageous situation in Gaza. We get huge criticism from the opposition. I say the only other people criticising us, in fact, is the Israeli government for the stance that we've taken.
What about Roderick O'Gorman's concerns that there was no reference to the issue of services in illegal settlements forming part of the Occupied Territories Bill? It didn't form part of the legal advice, and his suspicion is this is a delaying tactic.
It's not a delaying tactic. I mean, look, I mean, the Occupied Territories Bill is there. It's limited in scope in what it does, because we're not talking about sanctions against Israel in this bill. We're talking about sanctions on products coming from the Occupied Territories. It's about €1 million a year. It's a small amount of money. There's a lot of other things we can do. And I think very significantly this week, the EU-Israel Association Agreement is being reviewed. We were the ones to lead on that call, because you need to get countries at the Council of Ministers to do that, the EU. We were the first to look for that. Okay, and now we wanted suspension.
But
I think we have been leading on these issues.
It's the Dutch. Briefly, Sinead Gibney.
We're talking about is the implementation of the ICJ ruling within the Occupied Territories Bill. And there is zero legal precedent or need to removal of services from this bill. And the fact that the government are trying to do that just speaks to the fact that they're watering it down. There is no legal precedent in any other law that enforces a ruling of ceasing trade with occupied territories. And, you know, the reality is that we don't have the specific figures on the breakdown of trade versus goods or services versus goods. But if you take it as an estimate, it's going to be 70% trade based or services based on normal trade figures. And it is companies like, for example, Airbnb and Bookings.com who let out properties in the occupied West Bank right now. And the reality is that if we bring in this law, they will have to move those elsewhere. It is a domino effect. To suggest that this is only a tiny measure just belittles the activism, it belittles movements like, for example, the apartheid response of the Duns workers decades ago. This is what we're trying to do, is be moral leaders and be human rights leaders and international diplomatic leaders in doing this. And, you know, the Taoiseach has dragged his heels on this. We are now 6 months into this government and it isn't enacted. The people of Ireland are very clear on this. And to now suggest that this is a legal choice when it is so clearly a political and a policy choice on the part of this government to remove services is hugely problematic.
Okay.
We said the bill would be enacted.
All right.
And it's going to go for scrutiny before the Oireachtas, and everyone who's on the committees will be able to talk about this and in the Dáil and get this right and get this through and make sure it actually works for the people that we're trying to help.
Okay. But to suggest that it's an EU legal test of scrutiny, that's why this is, it's just wrong. It's a misfact.
I said that the scrutiny would be in the Dáil.
Okay. Well, one more question to you before we go. We heard that for yesterday from Owen McGee that a single person would need to save for 13 years to afford a deposit on a typical mortgage, Thomas Byrne. That was going on average incomes on average mortgages. Given the supply levels, there's no prospect of that changing soon. So what do you say to people who are on the verge of heading abroad in the hopes of trying to earn that deposit for a house, whose work is needed here?
Well, that's why one of the key issues the election was fought on was support for young people to purchase houses. We're roundly criticised. Again, the opposition tried to close them down. Some of the schemes we have to help people pay for houses and pay for deposits, they're there. And we want to continue them. But fundamentally, you mentioned the word supply. That is the most important thing. We are moving every lever we possibly can to get supply up, to get more houses into the market. And supply and demand works in housing. I know some on the left say it doesn't. It does. It works in housing. Right. We need more supply.
It didn't during the Celtic Tiger. The supply was at record levels and prices were only going in one direction.
If I was on this programme in 2010, you would have been accusing me of we built too many houses.
I'm talking about 2010.
No, but that's
about
the accusation we got.
2005,
that's
it was peak prices and there were 80,000 houses being built a year.
That's the allegation
anyway,
we got.
We got to take a break. We're back in a minute.